Go over to your SDF account, and then type com. Boom. C-O-M. Hit enter. Type G. Ba-da-ba-ba. Then you type Anon Radio. Hit enter, and you're in the chat room. Hello, Blink. Hello, X1. Welcome, welcome. So, let's get started with
world news.
That's right. We have plenty of that today. Let's get started. First, something nice. This comes from France 24. And so on August 10th, Vincent Guyot, who cultivates grain in the Aisne region of France, shared a video on Twitter announcing his initiative. In the clip, he calls on Minister of Food and Agriculture, Julien de Normandie, and Leah Salamé, a journalist, France Inter, and France Television to help the initiative. I'm ready to donate a ton of wheat for Lebanon, but I'm a simple grain farmer in the north, and I do not have the operational means to organize this chain of solidarity. Help me organize it so that we can do something concrete for this country. And then it's got the tweet and the video linked to it. And updates are shared under the hashtag Un ton de blé pour Lebanon. A ton of wheat for Lebanon. Oh, greetings, exiled. Boom. Pretty rad. It's in the planning phase, but it's really cool that a farmer took the initiative and was able to get help through Twitter. I'd prefer using Mastodon myself, but it's good that he was able to reach people. So let's keep on going. Let's dive into the more realistic news now. Now that we kind of got that sugar coating. So this is from our socialist friends over at the World Socialist website. It's whiskeysierra.org. If you're curious, amid mass strikes in Belarus, Lukashenko regime teeters on brink. We've got a couple of Belarus stories today. As workers across Belarus take strike action after the disputed elections, President Lukashenko's government is on the brink of collapse. Factories across the country were on strike yesterday after hundreds of thousands of people demonstrated in the capital. Lukashenko was booed as he spoke at the factory. We talked about that. Amid calls for a nationwide general strike, workers at dozens of industrial firms walked off the job yesterday. These firms include the tractor plant, wheel tractor plant, the metallurgical plant, Naftin, which is chemical and petroleum products, Grodonos Azot, chemical goods, the Belarusian railways, the Minsk Metro, the Belarus automobile plant, the automobile factory, the electrotechnical factory, Tesra, which makes windows and doors, and Belaruskali, which is a fertilizer miner and processing, and then Belteleradio Compania, which is telecom. So basically, everyone, all these industrial jobs, all across almost all these different sectors, walked out. So they were joined by striking healthcare workers, teachers, miners, state television employees, oil workers, textile workers. So basically, it's like the entire country. I don't know what jobs. I guess the police didn't walk off the job. They're the ones beating people up. But it's pretty amazing. It's great that the country is so united in fighting this, and it seems to be working. So here's something I learned about a new country today. So I just want to tell you, this next story comes to us from, let's see, Wikipedia, tell me how to pronounce it. Oh, that's right. Whenever I've got Jack on, I cannot listen to audio from the browser. It's called Mauritius? I'm not sure how to pronounce it. I'll put it in chat, though. Boop. Anyway, this country, I just learned it exists, but it's a small, this island is an island nation in the Indian Ocean about 2,000 kilometers off the southeast coast of the African continent and includes the main island of whatever in Rodriguez, Agaleaga, and St. Brandon. Okay, so that's where this happened. And basically, a ship on Tuesdays arrested the Indian captain of a Japanese-owned ship wrecked off the island nation's coast, spewing tons of oil into pristine waters, police said. The MV Wakashio ran aground on a coral reef on July 25th and began oozing more oil more than a week later, spilling more than 1,000 tons into blue waters popular among honeymooners and tourists. Officials have yet to reveal why the ship, which was making its way from Singapore to Brazil, had come so close to the island, which is now reeling from ecological disaster. We arrested the captain and his second-in-command today. They were taken to court on a provisionary charge. The investigation continues from tomorrow with the interrogation of other crew members. The captain's an Indian citizen, and his deputy, who is Sri Lankan, were charged under the Piracy and Maritime Violence Act and will reappear in court on October 25th. Salvage crews managed to pump some 3,000 tons of fuel off the bulk carrier before it split in two on Sunday, preventing a much larger environmental catastrophe. So, wow. I'm glad they were able to get 3,000 tons before it went into the ocean, but, man, that's got to suck. They're such a small country. It's going to be rough. All right, so let's keep going. We have yet to talk about the virus. Are you excited? I know I am. Let's hopefully get them some money. All right. So Neiman Lab, another site I like, muchos. This site has a great article now about Hong Kong and the press freedom. When more than 200 police officers raided the headquarters of Hong Kong's biggest and only pro-democracy mass circulation paper, Apple Daily, on August 10th, many people feared this spelled the end. We certainly did here in News to Me. I did. Earlier that day, they had arrested the paper's owner, Jimmy Lai, under a controversial new security law for colluding with foreign forces. He's since been released on bail. For Apple Daily reporter Patrick, in an asterisk, I'm guessing that's a pseudonym or a fake name, the symbolism was clear. It was the state apparatus using a paramilitary force to intrude upon media or, it's so long, if you're disobedient. Freedom of the press is enshrined in Hong Kong's basic law, but has suffered in recent years from political and economic pressure and resultant creeping self-censorship. Too much fluff. It's too much fluff for me to read super fast. But, in general, it's pointed out that Apple Daily was still publishing. It printed hundreds of thousands of extra copies after the raid. Citizens eagerly snapped up copies and bought shares in the paper's parent company, Next Digital. So, good luck, Hong Kong. Good luck, Apple Daily. So, let's see. Well, we got to keep it going. Let's talk about Belarus again real quick. The Nation has an article outlining why the factories joining in with the protests is Putin's nightmare. The title is "The Factory Joins the Square: Putin's Nightmare Unfolds in Belarus." And so, just the intro here is, Putin has long feared a color revolution might break out in Russia, as it did for his ally, President Viktor Yanukovych, next door in Ukraine, who was forced to flee the country, leaving his wealth and power behind. That scenario might yet be repeated for President Alexander Lukashenko in neighboring Belarus. The revolutions that have overturned political leaders in a number of post-Soviet societies have followed a typical scenario. After a clearly falsified election, crowds of people, often the young and well-educated, take to the streets and squares demanding free and fair elections. The outcome usually hinges on whether the police and militia defend the ruling authorities, often with violence, or whether they refuse to harass and beat protesters and instead defect to the crowds. Police forces in Belarus have been employing overwhelming violence so far, but what is different this time is that workers in a number of the largest factories have been engaging in strikes in support of the protests. And this is troubling for many reasons. They go through them all here, but oh my gosh, so much fun. It's definitely great if you want to hear about people in power struggling. Let's see if we can get a nice little sound bite, because it's like, well, you should just read the article. The big news, the main headline is, check it out, the factory workers striking is a serious deal, and it's bigger news, or it's more impactful because of that. Now, speaking about protesters, we've got some news from The Guardian today. Toronto police will pay $16.5 million to protesters wrongfully held at the 2010 G20 summit. So this is 10 years ago. There was a G20 summit. and about 1,100 protesters who were wrongfully detained at the G20 summit in Toronto will receive compensation from the city's police force after a historic $16.5 million Canadian dollar, $12.5 million U.S. settlement in a class action lawsuit. Under the settlement, which was announced late on Monday, each claimant will receive between $5,000 and $24,700, depending on the nature of their detention. They will also have their G20 protest-related records expunged. Thousands of protesters traveled to downtown Toronto to protest against the convening of the G20 summit. The causes were numerous, and the protests leading up to the 26th and 27th June summit were peaceful. During the summit, however, police cars were set on fire, and a small band of mass protesters incited vandalism and violence. The police responded by encircling more than 1,000 people, including police protesters, onlookers, and journalists at various locations, and then carried out mass arrests. At one point, hundreds were kettled in a torrential downpour and left to shiver in the cold. So, this is good news because it's a police department being held accountable, even though it took 10 years. All right, so we've gone over the third of the time I usually like to do. So here's just a couple other world headlines that are caught my eye, that were kind of interesting. Mutinying soldiers say they've detained Mali's President Keita, Prime Minister, and Prime Minister Sisse. A leader of the mutiny said both Malian President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita and Prime Minister Boubou Sisse had been detained by soldiers, sparking fears that a coup was in progress. As witnesses said, soldiers had surrounded Keita's private residence. A leader of the mutiny said both President and Prime Minister had been detained. "We can tell you that the President and Prime Minister are under our control." Two forces confirmed to Reuters that Keita had been detained. So, not sure what's happening yet, but they are detained. So, if you say, "Am I being detained?" Yes, they are. Also, in these times has a piece basically asking the U.S. to please stop this proxy war in Libya that we've been fighting, because Libya's already suffering enough. Libya has had two competing seats of government, the Tripoli-based Government of National Accord, which is led by Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj and recognized by the UN Security Council, and the eastern-based House of Representatives, an ally of the Libyan National Army. The Libyan National Army is led by Commander Khalifa Haftar, a U.S. citizen and one-time CIA asset who owns properties in Virginia. Russian contractors have taken control of two of Libya's largest oil factories, giving contractors sway over crucial export flows to Europe. So there are basically Russian and U.S. Puppets in control in Libya, and they are just destroying the country. So good luck there. Oh, aloha, SMJ. Welcome. Thank you guys for tuning in. We're going to play a song, and then we're going to come back to some U.S. news. There's a lot going on. We'll just say there is a lot going on. So, anyway. Here is Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles.
Video killed the radio star.
That's right.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
Okay, so video did kill the radio star, but not the internet. The internet birthed internet cat videos. So cat videos are alive and well. So let's talk about some domestic news. We've got a whole 12 minutes. I went a bit long on the world news, but there's a lot going on. And that's not even touching on the stuff going on in the U.S. So let's jump through a few hoops with the U.S. So today, President Trump is posthumously pardoning Susan B. Anthony. Why? Who is that? Well, she was a woman suffrage leader who was arrested for illegally voting as a woman in 1872. The announcement came at a White House event commemorating the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which outlawed voting restrictions based on sex. The pardon was covered by outlets on all sides, with some outlets covering the context of the 2020 election and Trump's polling with women. Some left-rated outlets include the context of Trump's mail-in voting comments and their coverage. Coverage from left- and center-rated outlets placed more focus on Trump's purported unpopularity with women, some framing that as a potential reason for the pardon. So, depending on who you ask, you will get slight different spin on it. But yeah, that's happened today. And that's it's good that we have that amendment. We'll see what happens. Right to vote is a bit interesting. The history and the order in which citizens got rights to vote. Another fun thing in the Donald Trump news block is it didn't take long for Trump to hit back at Michelle Obama after former first lady, in a searing speech for the Democratic National Convention on Monday, made the case for why he's simply not up to the job. But Trump's attempt to stick up for himself instantly backfired when he criticized Obama for pre-recording the video of her speech. It was not only taped, he complained, it was taped a long time ago because she had the wrong deaths. He's technically correct, but that's not a good thing. Obama, who said there were more than 150,000 U.S. deaths from the pandemic, was referring to a number that by Monday had become outdated. The death toll now has surpassed 170,000. Trump apparently wanted to remind everyone that more Americans have died from the coronavirus under his watch than a political opponent had given him credit for. She gets these fawning reviews, he continued. If you gave her a real review, it wouldn't be so fawning. So he goes on and on about this. Pretty interesting. Counterpunch has a bit too long of an article to go into. Well, it's not super long, but it's a minefield. I'll go off about it. But Counterpunch has a nice article about gassing immigrants and why the U.S. should stop doing that. We kind of already have them in camps, so gassing them's not a good look. Other quick headline is Kamala Harris chose her code name for the Secret Service code name. They get to pick their name, the president and vice president do, and that's going to be Pioneer. So that's her code name. Why people know their code names, it kind of defeats the purpose, but whatever. Alrighty. Portland protests and violence continue. Let's talk about some protests. This is from all sides, just like the earlier one there. We got to be sure and save all the salt we can so we can salt the earth. Don't forget. All right, so Portland protests, violence continues. So this is a roundup. A man was purportedly brought to the hospital with serious injuries late Sunday after he was allegedly dragged from his truck and beaten by a crowd in Portland, Oregon. The alleged assault, which was captured on video, happened as both peaceful demonstrators and violent riots ensued in and around the city following George Floyd's death in police custody in May. Elsewhere Sunday, the mother of a man fatally shot by police in 2018 led a crowd of demonstrators in protesting outside the Multnomah County Justice Center in the city's downtown neighborhood. The apparent beating was a focus of right-rated coverage throughout Monday, with less reporting coming from left- and center-rated sources. Many reports from right-rated sources characterized the alleged attackers as Antifa or Black Lives Matter. Some reports for left- and center-rated sources described the accused assailants as protesters. Other coverage, particularly from right- and center-rated outlets, focused on Portland Police Bureau's report that local police dispatchers are being inundated with 911 calls. So this was updated about 2 hours ago. So, pretty recent little headline, little summary there. There's lots of protests going on. I'm sure you are well aware of that. We have talked about it. So let's go over here. A little bit more on protesters. Looks like last night, six Seattle police officers were injured in a violent clash with an anti-police union protester group Sunday night that left 18 demonstrators arrested. It was around 7 p.m. with about 100 demonstrators marching from the International District calling on Seattle Police Union to be dismantled. The protesters, dressed in black and wearing gas masks, then headed to Seattle Police Officer Guild headquarters in SoDo, I guess southern downtown, along 4th Avenue South, where tensions quickly escalated. So then there was some violence. This is from MSN, by the way. And so there was some violence, and basically the police are saying that a bunch of, they were throwing stuff and threw rocks and explosives at the police, and a couple hit the cops. So after the cops were getting attacked, they called in reinforcements, and then the reinforcements came and shot all the protesters. Let's see. So the Daily Mail had also covered this, and their summary is basically, police said shortly after 10 p.m., someone in the crowd set off a large explosive. Authorities said they didn't declare a riot and began dispersing the crowd. As they tried to break up the group, individuals in the crowd began throwing rocks and bottles. Multiple explosives were thrown, and then police shared images of injured officers, including one with a black eye. How much you can believe the police is very questionable, because it's like, you know, it's just sad. It's a bit frustrating, but yeah, you can't really trust the police to report on themselves. And there's hours of video of police like destroying their own cop cars or feigning injuries by protesters. It's a grain of salt. Talking about protests is almost pointless these days, just because the cops you can't trust the police and the media, you know, anybody who goes to report on it gets shot at. So the coverage is all super biased. It's really sad. Don't trust the cops. All right. Let's see. We got more stuff going on. We've only got 5 minutes, a little under 5 minutes to go. I want to be sure and make sure that you know that you're listening to Anon Radio. And if you want to be a DJ, you can sign up to be a DJ. You can go to anonradio.net. There's all sorts of information there. Let's finish up with just a couple of quick, less heavy stories. Ellen has decided to fire 3 producers and apologizes to her staff for being impatient. Ellen DeGeneres announced big changes to her talk show, including the firing of 3 senior producers, doing an emotional video conference call to over 220 employees. The Ellen DeGeneres show is reeling after 2 BuzzFeed reports chronicled a toxic work environment. Accusations of sexual misconduct, racially insensitive comments, and bullying, currently cruelty, including on DeGeneres' part, were leveled at the production. She apologized to her staff for the second time since a report emerged last month. Sources told outlets including Variety and People she admitted not being perfect and said, "I'm a multi-layered person, and I try to be the best person I can, and I try to learn from my mistakes." So, that's pretty interesting. So yeah, that is what's happening there. So she said, "I'm sorry, fired a couple of meanies, we'll see how it goes." This usually is adequate mea culpa for these kind of things. And I mean, Ellen probably wants to retire eventually anyway. She's been doing the show for like 20, 30 years, forever. If you do want to get angry or riled up like Marcus, the Black Agenda Report has a new podcast out. It's titled U.S. Lies About Political Prisoners and Almost Everything Else, because the official U.S. Position is, believe it or not, the U.S. government says they don't hold any political prisoners. So that's pretty funny. There's probably at least one prison full of enemies of the state that are just political prisoners. So Anyway, check that out if you want. And just a couple of quick headlines, because we're running out of time. Reason has an article about would other countries trust a U.S. government-controlled Silicon Valley? Because it's kind of saying, why is, you know, the world is not trusting China and its apps, you know, its silicon, its technology groups, but the U.S. is just as bad or worse. So why is the U.S. okay but China not? So it's an interesting article. If you go to publicintegrity.org, they have a thing about OSHA and how Trump has been reducing the number of inspectors and loosening up on labor rules. So pretty scary there. And Salon has an article about a pesticide, the pesticide that was killing bees. It's now killing the birds. So if you didn't care about bugs, maybe you'll care about birds. So these cute little birds are dying. So it's sad. And so anyway, that's on salon.com if you want to check that out. I guess that's all we're going to be able to fit in here. Let's play the outro. Thanks a lot for tuning in. And we'll see Tom soon. Oh, yeah. Hello, Tom!
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Counting down the seconds. It's gonna be Tobe time.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin transmission.